Thank you. Be seated. Well,
what happened, Lou, son?
I thought you were here.
Justice Spector is recused and disqualified in this case as the trial judge. We are now ready to hear argument from Petitioner and Brown and Harris, Inc. v. Raymond.
I'm Sharon Calloway and I represent BFI, the petitioner in this application. In this marathon 3 days of argument, this is a fairly easy case to remember. It's the case that starts out as a rear-end traffic accident and ends up with an almost $800,000 tortious interference judgment. How, you say, as did everyone who read the advance sheet, or this court's grant of writ in this case, how did this happen? Erroneously, answers BFI, without support in the evidence, and with the trial and with the Court of Appeals resurrecting the conspiracy cause of action upon which the trial court had directed a verdict, and that directed verdict went unchallenged. By way of a brief overview of the facts, in the case, as I said, this started out as a rear-end accident. The BFI truck hit a Condor sweeper, which was performing sweeping activities along I-35 in San Antonio, hit it from the rear. Suit was filed about 4 months before trial. A tortious interference claim and a cause of action for civil conspiracy were added. The trial court directed a verdict against Condor on the civil conspiracy claim. The jury found yes to the question on tortious interference and yes to the negligence question and awarded about $797,000 on the tortious interference claim and about $30,000 in property damage on the negligence claim. BFI appealed the tortious interference claim. It did not appeal that part of the judgment related to the property damage. On appeal, BFI argued that there was absolutely no evidence of an act of tortious interference committed by BFI or any of its employees acting within the course and scope of their employment.
As far as the joinder of these two matters together, which you made reference to, there was also no objection before us from BFI about that, is there?
I'm sorry, I don't understand
the fact that the what you referred to as the rear-end collision that got converted into the $800,000 judgment, the fact that all this was tried at one time, BFI has no complaint about that.
No, there's no complaint about that whatsoever, Your Honor. The Court of Appeals, in analyzing the evidence that should have supported the tortious interference finding, grouped it into four parts. First, the rear-end accident itself was an act of tortious interference. Second, BFI's refusal to pay for the damage to the sweeper could have been a tortious interference act. Third, the break-in into Condor's equipment yard in Dallas might have been an act of tortious interference by BFI. And fourth, there was a statement which we're going to talk about today a lot, which we refer to in the briefing as the Dowell statement, wherein Dowell, a State Highway Department employee in Dallas, says to Mr. Rania, who is the principal in Condor Industries, that he and another Highway Department employee by the name of Connie Jones, who was the supervisor for this particular Dallas street sweeping contract, that he and Connie Jones were working with BFI to get Condor out of contract. Now, the Court of Appeals...
If instead his testimony, and I understand it was nothing of this type, this is purely a hypothetical, were that BFI has paid me $5,000 to get you out of this contract, would that be some evidence upon which this jury verdict and judgment could be sustained?
You bet it would, Your Honor.
So it does...
If that were an act by BFI. It's a situation in which BFI could have tortiously interfered if there were some act that you could point to.
And would that be some evidence even if BFI denied the truth of that statement?
Yes, because in a no evidence review, this court has to look to the evidence that exists, not the contrary evidence to the jury's verdict.
So it's not BFI's position that in order to have some evidence to support this judgment, that BFI had to confess to tortious interference.
No,
a third party would be one of the best way, a third party to either of the people involved in this suit, if the testimony were unequivocal, would be one of the best ways to establish that, wouldn't it?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so the question about this particular testimony is the entire essence of the testimony in question that this highway inspector or the department were working with BFI to get Raina out of the contract?
Our principal argument is that the whole case is centered on those few words.
Right.
And in those few words, there is no act by BFI. If you look at that statement, who's the actor? The subject of that sentence is Dow and Jones, State Department. And if you follow, in a minute, I'm going to follow that evidence through the record, and you're not going to see any act by BFI. And that's plaintiff's burden in this case.
Was that statement well known before this trial began?
No, that was the first time, Your Honor, that statement had ever been made. In fact, around page 335 of the Statement of Facts, when Mr. Valdez is cross-examining Mr. Raina, he says, I deposed you. Did you ever make reference to this working with statement? And Mr. Raina says, no, you didn't ask me. He said, wait just a minute. Look at the deposition. I asked you what you meant. You made this statement. It became evident to me that the state, keep in mind the state, wanted me out of this contract. And he said, I asked you what you meant by that, and you said, you know, I just meant that the state, why didn't you tell me then? I thought that, or it became evident because of the Dow statement. Another very crucial point about, I think it's about 368 in the record, Mr. Valdez also says, by the way, didn't you keep a log or a daily calendar during all this time of the street sweeping, because he was having numerous problems. The state was having problems with him, and he was having problems with the state. But didn't you keep a daily log? Yes, sir, I did. Didn't you use that to refresh your memory in the deposition? Didn't you use that to refresh your memory during the administrative hearing? Because there was an administrative hearing challenge to the state's defaulting of Condor on this contract. And Mr. Raina testifies very clearly that the administrative hearing finding was that the state did not act arbitrarily or capriciously, and the same type allegations were made there except for just working with statement. And Mr. Raina says, no, I never wrote that down in my law. So the first time anyone hears this quote working with statement is about, I guess, the first or second day of trial when Mr. Raina testifies. And it's just by its nature, just looking at it on its face, it's clearly a circumstantial evidence type that you've got to pile inference upon inference to get to this essential element of a tortious interference case.
Was there an objection made to that testimony at the time that it was offered?
No, it was not. There was not an objection.
Was there any attempt to call Dow or anyone else from the Highway Department to rebut it?
No, but keep in mind, this was what appeared to be a fairly small negligence case and was tried, I think, just in a couple of days. BFI did not have the burden. The burden was on plaintiff to show an act. The burden was not on BFI to disprove an act of liability.
I understand that, but when you say it was a fairly small negligence case at that time, before the trial began, you knew there was a claim for both tortious interference and conspiracy.
Yes,
right?
But we had not heard this working with. And recall, the Court of Appeals, and I think quite logically, says all the rest of this, they didn't intentionally rear-end you. They didn't intentionally not pay. That's just absolutely no evidence. So we went into trial with that same kind of view of there's really not a tortious interference claim here.
Were the amount of damages being sought for the tortious interference claim known before the trial began?
I know. I was not involved in the trial. I do know that we were provided with an expert's report, and I assume that within that report there was some figure placed on damages that Mr. Fulton could more easily respond.
You've come into this case after, you were not at the trial level, you've come in to handle the appeal, I gather. So I will try to go and look at some of these things, of course, in the record, but is there anything in the record to your knowledge to explain why there wasn't an effort, or was there an effort by BFI to refute this claim?
It caught them completely off guard, because they thought in Raina's deposition they had gone into why he felt that the state had defaulted him. Plus, you've got to remember the other evidence in this case, and Mr. Connie Jones testified by deposition, and Mr. Crump on behalf of Mr. Crump is a BFI employee, but Mr. Jones is a state employee, testified on deposition, and he goes into pages and pages of testimony about all the things BFI, he too has a log of all the things that Condor was doing wrong, So that's the posture of the case as we enter it, and I don't know that anyone could have foreseen or acted quickly with regard to this particular statement, and I think probably the trial attorney placed it in the same category that we place it in, and that is it's simply no act of tortious interference.
Mr. Dowell was kind of the frontline inspector for all the Dallas area?
I don't know about all the Dallas area, but at least that particular project that Condor was working on, he was the one that was having contact. Mr. Jones was the overall supervisor.
His deposition was never taken?
Mr. Dowell, not to my knowledge, it was not introduced at trial.
As part of this record.
Ms. Callaway, is a breach of contract an essential element of tortious interference in the contract?
There has to be an existing contract.
And then it has to be breached in order to, or does the plaintiff have to establish that the contracting party backed out of the contract because of conduct?
He has to establish that there was an existing contract that was interfered with. And I don't think it's a requirement that you have to go so far as to completely breach the contract, but you have to show there was a contract that was interfered with and damage resulted as a result of that. And I guess damage short of a complete breach. Here, however, there was clearly a complete breach in that the state defaulted on its contract.
Well, in that regard, if the administrative hearings result in the determination that the conduct of the city was appropriate or there was no inappropriate conduct by the city and their actions under the contract, does that have any bearing on the tortious interference claim?
It would seem to me, Your Honor, at least in evidentiary posture. Those hearings were not made an official part of the record at the time of trial, and therefore collateral estoppel could not be argued on
appeal. Well, I'm just talking about the result of the hearing finding, ultimately.
Exactly, Your Honor. Because these same, and Mr. Valdez asked Mr. Rainier during the direct, didn't you make these same allegations, as I said, short of the working with statement at the administrative hearing? And he said yes. So these same facts were considered, and they found, the administrative hearing process found that the state did not act arbitrarily and capriciously. Furthermore, there was a summary judgment entered on behalf of the state a year after this particular trial, which found that there was no...
That wouldn't be part of the record in this week.
I believe this court could take judicial notice of that particular civil action, which is a public record. It becomes clear after this discussion, I think, why the Court of Appeals resurrected the conspiracy theory, because there is no act. Both Condor's counsel very directly and the Court of Appeals, I think, impliedly recognized the very problem we've been talking about. There is no act. There is no willful and intentional act of interference by BFI or an employee of BFI with that Dallas street sweeping contract held by Condor. Condor's counsel says to Judge Spector, as she has just entered a directed verdict against Condor on the civil conspiracy claim, it's at page 399 of the record, and I quote, "The things I'm going to argue that constituted a default on the contract were not done by BFI. It was only done through the conspiracy, and by taking conspiracy out of the case, you're cutting me off at the knees." And Condor's counsel was right. There is no act by BFI, and if you take conspiracy out of this case, you have absolutely nothing left. Now, the Court of Appeals doesn't face it that directly, but I think impliedly recognizes that same problem.
Now, on the conspiracy issue, I'm not really sure what the difference between a conspiracy and tortious interference, and you're relying on this act. If BFI goes to the city and says, we can do this deal better than Condor can do, and the city says, let me see some of your documentation, and they give them some of the documentation, and so then they say, okay, Condor, the city partner says, Condor, you're no longer doing it, BFI is going to do it, and the only evidence they have is, well, these guys admitted that they were working with BFI to get us out of this contract, isn't that some evidence of an act? And tortious interference contract is a conspiracy.
If that were the evidence, Your Honor, because that's an act. If they had evidence that said BFI, Mr. Hortenstein, came to me, and as Justice Stockett said, came to me and offered me money to default you on this contract.
Well, it wouldn't have to be money. Just BFI just contacts him and says, we can do the deal better than they can.
But there's no evidence of that. The statement is, we, the state, are working with BFI to get you out of that contract. And if you look at all the context of that working with statement, first of all, it's always in the context of saving Condor's bonding. And there's a very distinct difference between saving their bonding. And if BFI had stepped in, like Dow outlined to Mr. Rankin, if Dow, state employee, who said, I'm recommending that you contact Mr. Hortenstein at BFI and see if they'll buy you out of the contract, because that would save your bonding. And Mr. Reina did just that. And that's what that working with statement is always talked about in the record. It's in two places, 323 it starts, and then 335 cross-examination.
Wasn't that essentially the argument that BFI made to the jury, that the jury rejected? Surely they didn't find $800,000 in damages because they thought BFI was trying to help with the bonding for Mr. Reina.
My time is up. May I respond to your
sure.
question? I'm sure that we made a similar type argument to the jury, but that's not to say that a jury always understands legal sufficiency of evidence, and that's why we're on appeal right now, because the jury didn't understand legal sufficiency of evidence and evidently did not understand that it had to be an act by BFI, not act by the state, which were attributed to BFI.
How could the state be working with BFI to get Reina out of the contract without BFI doing anything?
Well, the working with, when Mr. Dow says, I recommend that you call BFI. So BFI is being contacted, we know, at least by Mr. Rania, and probably by the state. We don't have any direct evidence, but that supposes when they say we're working with, and getting them out of the contract is not a tortious. If someone comes to BFI and says, please buy them out of the contract, that will save their bonding. So what ends up is this tortious interference finding ends up being based on a statement and being based on a notion that if, as a competitor, you don't bail another competitor out of a contract, then you've tortiously interfered with that contract. And I don't think that should be the law.
Ms. Cohen, let me ask you a question. In the Court of Appeals, with regards to this matter of BFI's alleged conspiracy with the Highway Department inspectors, the Court of Appeals slip opinion, page 12, does note, as you've outlined, that a directed verdict was entered by Judge Spector with regards to the conspiracy. However, in the footnote 5, this panel of the San Antonio Court of Appeals states that they conclude that this conspiracy was tried by consent, and they also note that no limiting instruction was requested or given to the jury. What is your response to the Court of Appeals' assessment or conclusion that this issue was tried by consent, and the fact that no limiting instruction was requested or given to the jury, in effect, cuts against it?
Okay. First, with regard to the tried by consent statement, you only try causes of action by consent. You don't try pieces of evidence by consent. And here, and therefore, a trial by consent cannot overcome a directed verdict. And that's what the Court of Appeals seems to somehow assume happens. And as far as I know, there's no legal requisite that a party, in order to preserve the validity or the legal function or effect of a directed verdict, has to get a limiting instruction or has to somehow prove that it wasn't tried by consent. And as this Court said, and I think the Hardy case that was cited on page 17 and 18 of the application, as this Court said, in that particular case, tried by consent is two parts. It's both the introduction of evidence and the submission of that cause of action, and therefore it's not tried by consent if it never gets submitted to the jury, and it didn't get submitted here because Judge Spector directed a verdict.
I think you've answered the question.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
Mr. Fulton, if a statement has to be relied upon for the inference that it makes to be foundation for an evidentiary finding, but the statement is susceptible of two reasonable inferences, don't you lose the benefit of that being supported? basically working with, one of the things I understand Ms. Calloway is saying is working with, under certain contexts, context might raise reasonable inference of tortious interference. But if working with is also equally susceptible in the facts of a context of cooperating to benefit the contracting party Condor, then can that still be considered any evidence to support the proposition that there's a willful and intentional act to interfere tortiously with another party's contract?
Your Honor, that was that issue was raised in $56,000 of currency case. It's cited in the respondent's supplemental reply brief on page 8. It's 730 Southwest 662. There was a, in the dissenting opinion, there was a contention in that case, and that it was, that if there are two inferences that are equally as likely, absolutely equally as likely, and there's nothing else for the jury to put their hand on to cause them to lean slightly one way or the other, then in that circumstances, based on the cases cited by Justice Mosley in that case, then no inferences can be made. But in the dissent written by Justice Campbell and joined by Justices Hill, Spears, and Gonzalez, the court stated that the majority had misapplied the rules of inferences and has invaded the province of the jury. And they found that the two inferences were not equal. Now, when I get to it, I will show you that I don't believe that the two inferences were equal at all. And I spent several pages in my reply brief discussing that very thing. And citing the case of Walter versus American States Insurance Company, 654 seconds, 423 at page 426, this court, and also in Farley versus MM Cattle Company, this court has said that only that you can set, that the court can set aside the inference made by the jury only if, as a matter of law, only the one inference can be made. And the court in the $56,000 U.S. currency case said that the fact finder made a reasonable inferential leap based on the facts proven in the case. Circumstantial evidence relied on by the trial court has the probative value sufficient to constitute a legal basis for the legal inference. I hope that answers your question, but I would like to, I don't believe this case just goes on that one statement. And I think the interesting thing about this case is that it is a circumstantial evidence case. There's no question about it. It's a case where we can analyze what are the boundaries of circumstantial evidence, what can a jury consider as circumstantial evidence, and how far can they go with it?
Do you have to show an act by being?
I don't think so, sir. I do not believe.
If you do, is there one shown here?
I believe, no, in the sense that an eyewitness says, Tom, I saw Tom murder Joan, John. The witness doesn't say, I saw Tom shoot him with between the eyes or this or that. The statement is they were working with. The circumstantial evidence that I'll go into shows what the act was.
But I'm not sure I understood your answer to Judge Heck. You're not, are you saying that you do not have to show as an element of malicious prosecution a willful and intentional act?
Yes, I have to prove facts from which the jury can infer a willful and intentional act, but they can do that from an inference from the circumstantial evidence. And I don't have to have direct testimony that, yes, I saw James Harkin sing and he talked to John Dowell, and they discussed putting the heat on the Condor. I don't have to have that. From the circumstantial evidence proven in this case, the jury can make that reasonable inference.
If this court believes that the only evidence in this case that shows a willful and intentional act of BFI is this statement by Mr. Dowell that he was working with BFI to get Condor out of the contract, isn't that a mere scintilla of the evidence?
Only if taken by itself to the exclusion of all of the other circumstantial evidence in the case. And that's why I would like to get into the reasons why I think this particular case is an important case with respect to the boundaries of circumstantial evidence. And with respect to that, I would like to apply an analogy or an example and draw from the world. Class is going on about a mile north of here, from the laws of statistics and probability. And this seems like far-fetched from this case, but the laws of statistics and probability and mathematics go to proving statistical facts to a certain degree of certainty. For example, let's take a coin toss. Toss a coin 10 times or 100 times. Each individual toss of the coin has no relevance whatever to whether or not that coin is fair or not fair. But when you toss it 100 times and it comes up heads 90 of those 100 times, all of those individual facts taken together do in fact prove to a mathematical certainty that the coin is not fair. Apply, and the same thing with a die, which is half a dice. If you throw a die 100 times, they're six-sided. Just random chance says you should get, you know, there's six. Let's say you throw it 60 times. Each side should get 10, but if they get 8 or they get 12 or maybe even 15, that would allow for a random chance. But each individual throw of that die is absolutely irrelevant to whether the die is fair or not fair. And if we take and apply that to the law and say, okay, we're going to look at this fact and this fact and this fact and this fact and this fact, but we think this particular fact is not relevant to whether or not there was something going on here, so we're going to totally exclude that. If you did that in the statistical test, you would throw out every single individual throw of the coin or the die, and you would end up with no statistical test.
I understand, but could you detail for us, sort of in a 1-2-3-4 fashion, the other bits of circumstantial evidence?
I intend to do that right now, sir. Applying that logic, the reason I gave the example is because as I state these things, I don't want the court to just throw those things out because they don't prove in and of themselves, isolated by themselves, tortious interference. You start off with the proposition that before 1986, the state of Texas did all of its own street sweeping. In 1986, it decided to let out the street sweeping to independent contractors. This is a billion-dollar industry. The state of Texas pays out billions for street sweeper contracts all over its state. In 1987, Condor Industries, which is run by Louis Reyna and his wife sitting there, and was run out of their house, bought three street sweepers, and even though they're small, Mrs. Reyna has a master's degree in finance and is sharp enough to outbid Browning Ferris Industries for two contracts in San Antonio, right in the heart, outbid and bid against BFI. Well, after they bid against them, these are events, these are flips of the coin, but consider them all together. After they won this contract, they had three street sweepers. They were trying to complete the street sweepers when a BFI truck rams the rear of one of their street sweepers and completely puts it out of business. They're left with operating on two street sweepers, attempting to complete that contract and almost defaulted it. All of this is in the record.
You argue that that was an intentional lie.
Your Honor, I'm saying it doesn't matter, because when you put all of these things together, these events keep coming up where BFI is on the top and Condor is on the bottom. And it's not until you put them all together and join them with Dow's statement do they show the inference that I'm leading up to.
Let me ask you that. Without Dow's statement, if you had only all the other events, would that be enough?
I don't know, Your Honor.
Might be. Your position is it might be.
It might be.
Question.
I don't know, because the jury had it.
Is the question one of legal sufficiency really here?
No.
Isn't that what we're doing?
Well, legal sufficiency. That is what we're talking about.
Was this statement by this Highway Department employee taken in conjunction with the cumulative undisputed facts, for the most part, I guess, that have occurred elsewhere, legally sufficient to uphold the jury's
verdict? There's no question.
Isn't that what we're dealing with?
It is a legal sufficiency question. There's no question in my mind about it.
Legal sufficiency to sustain a verdict
on issue number four only.
On conspiracy as the Court of Appeals
now?
Because this is what we're dealing with, a judgment of the Court of Appeals. And you either have to defend, you know, you sit, you either win
the
or lose. That's the only thing before us, is the appeal, is the judgment of the Court of Appeals.
I understand.
And the Court of Appeals based its judgment on conspiracy.
It did not. There's not one word. It considered circumstantial evidence that it categorized. If the court would please look at my supplemental brief that was filed last week. All it did was categorize all of this evidence that I'm talking about, and they called it conspiracy evidence. But there's absolutely no fine. And they said we are going to review that in the context of our evidentiary focus of Condor's tortuous interference claim. It does not say in any way, shape, or form in this opinion that they are finding BFI liable as a co-conspirator with the state inspectors.
And at the time that you introduced that evidence, you did not limit it to just one of your causes of action.
I did not limit it to one of my causes of action, nor was there any objection to it, nor was there any request for a limiting statement, nor was there any appeal of the issue number five, which is the proximate cause. The only appeal is on issue number four, which the issue before this court is there some evidence.
Would you say that the
tortious interference,
this Highway Department employee statement, corroborated Mr. Rainey's mind, apparently in the jury's mind, the import of the other facts that have been established?
I don't think there's any question about it, Your Honor.
Not the conspiracy.
Whether they call it
the trial court directed the verdict on that, that's basis for the jury's finding, nor the Court of Appeals finding, you've got to be arguing, but it was the evidence of corroboration, the evidence that here was a Highway Department employee and perhaps other Highway Department employees that were in collusion with BFI trying to upend them on this contract.
Exactly, Your Honor, and it did not make any difference to this holding of the Court of Appeals whether or not there was, in fact, a formal legal conspiracy. And that is what I say in my supplemental brief, that way back to trial, that Judge Spector was trying to explain to me. And I quote her in the brief. She says, Mr. Fulton, it doesn't make any difference whether there was a conspiracy or not. If BFI attempted to interfere with the contract, then tortious interference has been established. It doesn't matter whether they formally entered into a conspiracy or not.
Mr. Fulton, the Court of Appeals did not agree with Judge Spector because the Court of Appeals thought it was very significant that the conspiracy was brought by consent. What is your position on footnote 5 by the Court of Appeals?
Footnote 5 is that the issue was tried by consent.
Why is that in there?
In my opinion, Your Honor, the reason that is in there is because there was no objection of any kind to any of the evidence that went, that came in concerning all of the things that I haven't gotten to yet, but I hope to be able to get to, that went on. All of these flips of the coin were BFI lands on top and Condor lands on the bottom. And picking up with that, in there was a lawsuit, and it did start off as the suit over this damage. But in June of 1988, Exhibit 40 is a letter from counsel for Condor to counsel for BFI, and it is on the statement of facts at page 259. In that letter, it says, this is advising BFI. This is to advise that Condor Industries has a new round of contract bids coming up in approximately 6 weeks. That is the Dallas. This letter is written at the time the bidding was going on for the Dallas contract. My client Street Sweeper is in Swartz Industries in Huntsville, Alabama for repairs, but he is unable to pay to have the machine repair done. If we get this matter, if we can get this matter resolved, we can get this machine back in San Antonio before the contracts are held, it will save my client a great deal of loss of profits. This is June, not 88. And the loss of use of this machine, if my client does not have his machine available for this contract bid, we estimate that this will add an additional $100,000 in lost profits and loss of use of said machine. We have the deposition set up in the near future. I hope we can resolve the matter shortly. It is important to point out, I think, this is set in June of 88. I think it is important to point out that the defendant, BFI, is the primary company against whom my client will be competing for business. That is, in Dallas. It seems to be a remarkable coincidence that it was a BFI truck that put my client Street Sweeper out of commission. This was a letter written to BFI in June of 88, after which Mr. James Hartenstein, who is the regional sweeping manager for the Southwest region for BFI, sends a man from Houston all the way to Huntsville, Alabama. This is the only way they knew where that truck was, to check out the condition of that truck. And he writes a report to Mr. Hartenstein 5 days before August the 31st. And on August the 31st, Condor had moved all of their equipment up to begin the Dallas contract. And a mysterious break-in occurs in which Condor street sweepers are viciously vandalized. The spark plugs are taken off. Debris is stuffed in there, and they put back on. These street sweepers have big computerized arrow boards on the back that are operated by a little computer chip that's in a little box about this big around, and that's hidden down under the seat in the street sweepers. Every one of these things was taken. They're of no use to a burglar. They were taken out of these machines, obviously for the purpose of keeping the street sweepers out. This is the day before they have to start the contract. 2 days later, they get a notice of default, the first notice of default from the state, because they weren't there the next day after this break-in.
Mr. Fulton, the Court of Appeals, with regards to that particular incident, says there is no evidence any agent or employee of BFI had any part in the break-in.
That is true, Your Honor, and that is the point that I'm trying to make here, is that all of these things taken together, even though each individual throw of the coin or the dime does not prove tortious interference, when you consider them all together with the statement of Dow that these working with BFI to get Condor out of the contract, that is some evidence upon which the jury can make a reasonable inference that BMI intentionally and willfully interfered with the contract of Condor. Doesn't mean they have to, pardon my finger, doesn't mean they have to breach the contract. Under, in my reply, supplemental reply brief, all they have to do is make Condor's performance on the contract more burdensome.
Any other questions?
Counsel, some people view every jury verdict that they don't like as a toss of the die or a toss of the coin. And if we're to preserve that system, it is our obligation as an appellate court to review those jury verdicts to be sure that there's some legally sufficient evidence to support them. If none of the individual elements of this evidence amount to anything other than no evidence, as you've described them, if none of them standing alone would be evidence, how can the sum of the parts be anything less than a scintilla of evidence?
How can,
more than a scintilla of evidence?
How can each individual flip of a coin be absolutely no evidence of whether that coin is fair or not? But when you take all of the flips together, and they all come up with BFI on top and Condor on bottom, and then you take that together with a affirmative statement of the inspector for Condor's job that he and his supervisor are working with BFI to get Condor out of the contract in light of all of these other things. That's how. It's no more or no less than it's identical to the throw of the die or the throw of the coin test.
One last question, Mr. Fulton. Do you, is saving the contracting bond for the for Condor a valuable benefit to Condor?
Yes, sir. It's the bondability. It's the same as creditability or the ability to obtain credit, as was defined
if,
as...
If they had been moved out of the contract with someone else coming in to complete the contract, do you agree with BFI's contention that that would have saved their bond?
I agree with that contention that it would have, it could have saved the bond, but what I'm saying is when you take all of this circumstantial evidence together with the Dow's positive statement, it, the jury should be allowed, who sat there and listened to all of these people, including Mr. Hartenstein, who, by the way, never denied any of this allegation.
That, I think you've answered my question.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions?
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
When asked by Justice Hightower, what act by BFI constituted or supported that tortious interference finding question for? Condor spends most of the morning talking about the rear-end accident, the break-in, and the refusal to pay for the equipment. As Justice Doggett pointed out very correctly, the Court of Appeals held that that was no evidence of tortious interference. And how can it now be used to add to or make this working with statement more than a scintilla? It cannot be used to do so. It's the very reason that the law has the rule about pyramiding of inferences and will not allow them. Contrary to Condor's statement this morning, it does have a duty to prove an act by BFI, not an act by the state of Texas, which it thereafter tries to attribute to BFI, but an act by BFI, and it cannot do that. And that's why the Court of Appeals resurrected conspiracy. And if you look at page 12 of the slip opinion of the Court of Appeals, that's exactly what it does. In the whole area, it's gone through all the evidence, saying no evidence, no evidence, gets to the working with statement. How does it head that? BFI's conspiracy with the Highway Department. And then that important footnote 5, which troubles Justice Gonzalez and troubles me too. You don't try evidence by consent. You try causes of action by consent. And the Court of Appeals is treating this as a cause of action for conspiracy, because it has to. It can't find an act by BFI either, and the only way you can uphold that tortious interference is to attribute the state's act to BFI, and that's why conspiracy is in here. Look at the topic sentence or the lead-in sentence to this whole discussion of the working with statement. The court says, and I quote, Condor contends that there's some evidence that reasonably applied implies a conspiracy between employees of BFI acting in force and scope of the Highway Department. That's exactly what the court, that's exactly what Condor argued.
Well, you're saying that the working with statement itself is no more than a mere scintilla.
That's right.
Of any evidence, and that that statement cannot make these other events, coincidental as they may be, evidence of any act by BFI.
That's right, because the Court of Appeals held that all those acts that Condor spent so much time this morning talking about in terms of Dye and Snake Eyes and whatever else, not being a gambler or a statistician, I'm a little off key here, but I know this much, those acts were held to be no evidence whatsoever, and that's not, excuse me, Your Honor?
That determination is one we could review. You find the reasoning of the Court of Appeals to be persuasive, I gather.
Well, I find it quite persuasive,
it's
and it's not a tax. It's not a tax. It was not a tax on motion for rehearing, and therefore it is not brought to this court. And counsel cannot stand here today and resurrect that evidence. It's out. It's no evidence.
Well, let me ask you about his last comment to Justice Gonzalez about Mr. Hartenstein. I gather that BFI put on some evidence in its defense after what you've described as a surprise statement from Mr. Reyna about Mr. Dow and the working with BFI to get them out. Did BFI, through Mr. Hartenstein, deny?
I believe the Hartenstein testimony was by deposition, Your Honor.
He testified live.
I'm sorry. I didn't.
Well, you check the record. I realize you weren't there.
He does ask the specific question. And again, I'm going to take the position that BFI does not have to disprove this working with statement. But he does ask, Mr. Valdez does ask Mr. Crump, who was involved in the bidding process on behalf of BFI, he does say, did you ever work with the state to interfere with this contract? And he says, no. I don't believe Hartenstein was asked about, did you call Mr. Rainey? And Hartenstein says, yes, I did. And in fact, if you look at the evidence, if you just follow through the evidence starting on about 323 of the record of his working with statement, when Rainey calls Hartenstein, what does he say? He doesn't say, hey, man, you were interfering with my contract, and you better get me out of it. I'm going to lose my bonding. No, he says, Connie Jones and John Dow want you to take over the contract. They're going to default me. They're going to default me no matter what. Would you please take over my contract? And BFI looks at it and decides economically they can't get the people in, et cetera, finish the contract because Condor has dismally performed this contract. They're way behind schedule and bid it very close also. And BFI simply, for economic reasons, is not going to step in at that point. And that does not equal a willful and intentional act of tortious interference, simply to say, I'm sorry, I can't bail you out because I can't make any profit by doing so. Then following through, Mr. Branya also reports this incident to Mr. Jones, the supervisor at the state. And he says in that report, the state, John Dow and Connie Jones, are working to get me out of the contract. Says nothing about BFI's involvement.
Can BFI's failure to resolve the original rear-end collision be considered as evidence under this record of an act of tortious interference?
No, Your Honor, because of the Court of Appeals holding that it is no evidence, and that's an unattacked holding, and therefore not subject to review.
After Mr. Rainey testified to the statement by the Highway Department employee, and if the other gentleman testified live, if the record discloses that he was asked a question in response to that assertion, and whatever his response was, it was a failure to deny that assertion. could the jury consider in determining weight and credibility of the evidence, Mr. Rainey's statement in that context?
Certainly. The jury would have weighed the evidence. Ours is merely a legal sufficiency argument.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
That concludes the argument in the second clause, and the court will now take another brief recess.